Production support for Earth Eats comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers on Bloomington's east side corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. Brunch every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. NeedMoreRoasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeigner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young.
What people need is skills, opportunities, and well-paying jobs, not food boxes.
On this week's show, we take a look at food assistance from a few different angles. We talk with Noreen Springstead from the organization Why Hunger about the proposal from the White House to give food stamp recipients a box of food in place of half of their benefits. And we follow Farm to Family Fund volunteers as they gather up produce from a local winter farmers market and deliver the goods to agencies providing food assistance. Plus, what does your local food pantry offer that you may not be able to buy in a store? That's all just ahead on Earth Eats.
Hey, Kate, sorry to hear you're under the weather.
Oh, thanks, Alex. I'm glad you're back on the news this week.
Me too. Drink lots of fluids. Although, remember that article on our website about that trusted combination of tea, honey, and lemon that you thought was great for your sore throat? It seems like it might just be the hot water. So I'll put that kettle on for you in a few. But first, I've got a couple of farm stories. Most farmers never expect to get rich from their jobs. But these days, they also can't expect to make a living. New data from the USDA shows that this year, an estimated 82% of farm income will come from off-farm jobs, and about half of farming families will rely on insurance by off-farm employers. That sounds like a lot, and it is, though it's important to keep in mind that farmers have relied on off-farm income for several decades now. In 1960, it was about half of all farmers. But in recent years, declining prices in corn, wheat, and other farm products have cut total U.S. farm income in half, meaning a lot more farmers need other sources of income. The decrease in income also runs parallel to a rise in costs, like the average price of an acre's worth of corn seeds, which has quadrupled in the past 20 years. It's a vicious cycle. Spending time off the farm makes it harder to grow high-quality crops and manage more acreage, both of which are key to making enough to farm full-time. And if the crops fail, farmers rely on crop insurance. Kansas Senator Pat Roberts says the level of federal subsidies for crop insurance will dominate this year's Farm Bill discussion. The Kansan, who chairs the Senate Agriculture Committee, talked about the issue at the end of February. Ben Kiebrick of Harvest Public Media explains.
At a farm convention in Kansas City, Roberts said a federal budget deal that included protections for dairy and cotton farmers against catastrophic losses could make passing a farm bill simpler. Debate over the farm bill comes on the heels of some tough years for farmers, so the Kansan wants to make sure they're covered when weather or low prices strike. He wants to protect crop insurance subsidies from cuts.
Now's not the time to monkey with crop insurance. As far as I'm concerned, we're not going to do that. We just are not going to do that.
Robert said he expected this year's farm bill to pass in spring. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Ben Kiebrick.
Thanks to Taylor Killow and Harvest Public Media for those stories.
By now, you've probably heard about the proposal from the White House to give SNAP recipients half of their monthly benefits in the form of food boxes, rather than in the form of money to purchase food at a grocery store. Why Hunger is an organization based in New York, and they work with many hunger relief agencies and nonprofits around the country and globally. I asked Why Hunger's Executive Director Noreen Springstead to weigh in on the new proposal. But first, I asked her to tell us a little bit about Why Hunger and the kind of work they do.
Why Hunger is a global organization. We have an international program and we have a domestic program working with the goal to end hunger and poverty. We work with thousands of grassroots organizations, many of whom are providing food, whether that be a food bank, soup kitchen, or food pantry, and also many community organizations that are working at the heart of social justice. And what that means is they're really looking at the intersections of why people are poor. That could be economic inequality, racism, health inequity, or environmental issues. So we consider ourselves very progressive, and we are a grassroots support organization. So we work with those grassroots organizations both in the U.S. and around the world in a similar fashion, where we help build their capacity to do what they're doing and do it better with the whole goal of ending hunger. There's been a real dominant narrative in using food charity as the main tool to end hunger when it's not really solving the problem. And one of the main strategies and tactics that we're using is really to build a strong social movement rooted in social justice, centering the right to food as the priority in how we might end hunger.
So I have you on the phone today to talk about the proposal coming out of the White House for SNAP recipients to receive half of their benefits in the form of a food box. They're also calling mm-hmm. it a harvest box filled with non-perishable food items. So given your organization's approach to food assistance, mm-hmm. what's been your response to the Harvest Box proposal?
Well, my initial reaction is complete outrage. This is not, people certainly need food, and there's an incredible network of food banks and pantries and kitchens. There's almost 70,000 frontline organizations providing food to people, and that has been the dominant response for 40 years, and it has not solved the problem. So my response is, that's just outrageous that we're going to give people food boxes that are not necessarily healthy or fit within a person's particular culture, or may not even be what they need or want. So it creates stigma. It creates a logistical nightmare. What people need is skills, opportunities, and well-paying jobs, not food boxes. And I think we'd do a lot better if we put our time and energy on those things, which would be very asset-driven, and create general prosperity for every citizen in the country, rather than using this is the best we got. We're going to give harvest boxes or food boxes and in effect create another class of people. So I think it's outrageous. They're missing the temperament of what's going on in the country. So Why Hunger is part of the Closing the Hunger Gap leadership team, and we work with organizations all across the country. One of our favorite partners in Bloomington, Indiana, The Hub, is part of the Closing the Hunger Gap leadership team, and they have, in effect, transformed from that food charity model to one that prioritizes the people that are coming to the pantry, their dignity, their opportunity, and their health. So if we're not giving fresh foods to people, then we might be solving one problem, which is the hunger that you're experiencing in a day, and creating another health problem, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. So there is a massive momentum and social, potentially strong social movement building in the U.S. to prioritize healthy foods and changing the response to hunger so that we can eliminate it, not just kind of Band-Aid it.
What do you think is the likelihood of this proposal actually getting passed or, you know, happening?
I don't think the food boxes are going to pass. It's a logistical nightmare. The ranking members of the House Ag and the Senate Ag do not seem favorable to it, and they also see the value and the power of SNAP, which is formerly known as food stamps. SNAP is flexible and responsive to when people need it. People are not on SNAP forever. It's a cyclical program. When there's an economic downturn or you lose a job or you have a health crisis, it's there when you need it. And it's a federal entitlement, and that's important part of why it works so well. It's also an economic generator. So When someone uses SNAP, which is basically now an electronic card that you can use in the supermarket, they're generating economic activity locally from federal dollars. So there is huge bipartisan support for the program, and I think there's progressive support for programs that are really addressing hunger at the root and also looking at health as well.
Are there other threats to SNAP or other food assistance programs that we might be missing by focusing on the harvest boxes?
That's a really great point. This is the tactic of distraction and distortion, so you miss what's really going on, because you can, it's great to be outraged about this, but if you put all your time and energy into the outrage, you might miss something. So of course, this is a battle that all the anti-hunger advocates are being vigilant about, and some of our best partners, especially Food Research and Action Center in D.C. and the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, are really strategizing on those face-to-face meetings with the Congress people that have the power to make things happen. So we cannot be distracted by this particular idea that's got everybody, you know, up in arms. So I think we got to keep our eyes on the prize and make sure SNAP stays fully funded and other important government programs as well.
That was Noreen Springstead, Executive Director of Why Hunger, speaking to us on the phone from New York City. We have a link on our website so you can find out more about their work. That's eartheats.org. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step, New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. I recently heard a story on NPR about venison, also known as wild deer meat. The story talked about how it's illegal to sell deer meat unless it's been raised on a farm. So if you're a hunter and you end up with more deer meat than your family can use in a season, you cannot sell it. However, you can give venison away, and you can share it with a food pantry or a soup kitchen if it's processed in a commercial facility. The processing can be expensive, though. And that's where an organization called Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry comes in. They raise funds to help offset the cost of processing so that farmers and hunters with meat to donate don't need to foot the bill for processing. They can also step in when wildlife management implements a deer cull. This winter, the city of Bloomington conducted a deer herd reduction at the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve. The cull was an attempt to manage the deer population and reduce damage to many plant species in the nature preserve. The issue has been highly controversial in the community, but it felt like a silver lining to learn that the venison was being processed locally thanks to Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry, and then donated to the Hoosier Hills Food Bank. I stopped into Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, a food pantry served by the Hoosier Hills Food Bank, to see how folks responded to venison as an option. A guy named Homer was running the meat counter.
What have you got in the meat counter today?
Oh, it's kind of a limited selection today. We have smoked sliced turkey. We have ground venison and ground beef.
People excited about the venison?
They are. It's gone very quickly. We'd like to encourage all the deer hunters in this part of the country to remember us when they harvest their deer.
So are you a hunter yourself?
Not anymore. I used to when I was feeding all my kids. We had big gardens, and I'd put a deer in the freezer every year, and we'd kill a couple of pigs. But it's just me and my wife now. So I still went. I'd take off and go to the woods, but I wouldn't kill anything. Finally, she says, "You know, you don't have to carry the gun." She said, "You want to go out in the woods and sit? Just go out there and sit." So,
if you were going to cook with it, what would you make?
Well, till my kids grew up and left home, they didn't know it wasn't hamburger. And we made everything with it. We made chili, spaghetti sauce, pizzas, and obviously burgers, meatloaf, anything you could use ground, any kind of ground meat for, you can use ground venison.
I talked with John All, who was getting plastic bags ready for people at the front desk.
Yeah, we got probably, 100, 150 pounds of venison in and bagged up. And it's about all gone now. That was about 2 or 3 hours ago.
So people are excited to get it?
Oh, yeah. Most of them are. A lot of them don't, you know, because it's got a different taste. They're kind of back away from it. Most people like it. And it's nice, big sizes for families, too.
Yeah, it's more than a pound.
Oh, yeah, it's about 3 or 4 pounds.
Oh, that's great. Do you like deer meat?
Oh, yeah. I eat it every chance I get. Every time we have it here, I'm on it. Well, you can cook up a big hamburger and it stays that way. It don't shrink up like hamburger meat does, you know. It actually stays that size, whatever you make it, because it hadn't got much fat, you know.
But it's still got a good flavor and everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, I like it. Thank
you. Before I left the pantry, the venison was gone. There's a national organization called Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry, or FHFH. There might even be a chapter in your area. We'll have a link on our website to help you find out. EarthEats.org. Most people don't think of deer hunting as a source for emergency food providers. With an imperfect food system, people have to get creative to find ways of getting fresh, local, nutritious food to families who need it. And that's the mission behind Farm to Family Fund.
My name is Janice Lilly.
I'm Deborah Piston-Hatlin, and our organization is Farm to Family Fund. So this is where we buy up produce at the end of the market for half price from the farmers who have extra and would like to sell to us. And then we deliver it directly to the Rise, the community kitchen, and Mother Hubbard's cupboard.
I went around the market with Deborah one Saturday as she asked farmers if they would have anything to donate at the end of the market.
Hi, Kim. Are you going to have anything today?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Bit.
We haven't had anything since December 9th, so that'll be great. We'll be back.
Okay.
Hi there.
Hi there.
You got anything for us today?
I think that I do, yes. Well, thank you very much.
We'll be back to pick it up.
Cool.
It's not really a donation, though. The farmers do get paid for the food that Farm to Family picks up when the market's over. It's just half price instead of full price. She gives everyone a sheet to keep track of how much they have to share to make sure everyone gets paid the right amount.
I'm Teresa Bertles, and I own Heartland Family Farm.
And so what kinds of things have you been able to offer for the Farm to Family Fund in the past?
We do, in the early season, quite a bit of greens. If we have leftover greens as the season goes on, we do potatoes, sweet potatoes, and winter squash. We've also gone through the Farm to Family Fund with some chickens, and that was a real winner. People really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I bet. I think when people think of something like this, they wouldn't normally think that meat would be a part of it.
Right, and meat is often a high dollar item for families to purchase, so to have the opportunity to have organic or free range chicken is a wonderful thing.
I asked for her thoughts on the Farm to Family Fund.
My perspective is it is both honoring to the farmer for the work of the farmer's hands and also honoring to the people who need the food. And so it's a win-win situation. And, you know, often when people think about, well, you have these things left over, why don't you just donate them? And we do. Lots of times we do, and that's wonderful. But the Farm to Family Fund is honoring the work that we do. You know, when you're out there working hard and you have things left over, yes, you might be eating a lot of kale that week or feeding it to livestock or chickens, but it's much better to get even just half the price of it and know that it's going to nourish your community.
After they gather up the food from the farmers and collect the paperwork, we head out to Janice's car. She and her husband, Carrie, have loaded up the back of their Prius with produce, and Deborah and her husband have the rest in their car.
Okay, we're good. We're coming.
I ride with Janice and Carrie.
Bye.
So what's our first stop today?
The first stop is at the Rise. The Rise is the apartment building that is part of Middleway House, which is a program for families escaping domestic abuse. So we always go to the Rise first, but we leave them like, you know, maybe half a dozen heads of lettuce and three or four butternut squash. Sometimes we'll get a half bushel bag of apples in the early part of the season, and they love getting those. So a few small things like that. And then we go to the community kitchen and basically open the car and say, this is what we've got this week. What do you want? And then everything else that we have left, we take to the hub.
We pull up at the Rise, and a staff member buzzes us in.
Okay, so we have some microgreens. And we have some basil, butternuts, and lettuce. Can we put this out?
Then it was back to the car and on to the next location.
The next stop is the Community Kitchen of Monroe County. And they make meals for people in the community who don't have access to food. So when we get there, they're in the process of cooking their dinner. And so they'll look at what we have, and they'll take things that they'll put in their cooler, and sometimes they'll take things and use them for dinner that night.
Heather Craig is a cook and volunteer coordinator at the community kitchen. She met us at the back door to the kitchen.
A lot of butternuts.
Sweet. I have a really large group of volunteers coming back this afternoon, and I need stuff for them to do so they can peel butternut squash and chop. They're a great group. Yes, we will take all those.
Okay. And then other than that, we have some basil.
Ooh, I get so excited.
Microgreens.
I love them, but nobody else uses them. I'll throw them in the salad tonight.
That's what we said.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, I'm like the one who likes to use all the fun stuff. See, maybe Alex would like some. He's making a frittata for the vegetarians, so maybe some basil. Oh, here, I can count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, it looks like. 15 squash.
And a basil.
So, we look very much forward to all this fresh.
Baby beans.
Actually, I think, let me save some for the hub. Let me just take two.
Okay.
So somebody else. Oh, here, you can have that bag and I'll put that loose.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so
work.
I took two. Yeah.
So what do you think you're going to do with that basil?
Well, I said Alex is making his cooking today. I'm volunteer coordinating, so he's going to make a frittata. So I think he's going to probably put some fresh basil in there with some vegetables and make a nice, that'll be a wonderful addition.
What do you think will happen with all that butternut?
Well, I think Monday we have some beef stew meat thawed out, and I just had the volunteers peel up and cut up a bunch of potatoes, so I'll have that. We'll have a nice root vegetable beef stew, which sounds pretty darn good, especially if it stays like this weather.
The cooks at the community kitchen focus on healthy meals, and they want them to be delicious. They incorporate fresh local ingredients any chance they get.
So our last stop is Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, which is also known as the Hub, and they are a food pantry. They also have an extensive education program teaching people about nutrition, how to cook food, how to grow food, how to preserve food.
So, and what's the situation here? Does somebody meet you here, or?
We have a key. They trusted us with the key.
Okay.
Janice and Carrie, Deborah and Merrill, carry the last of the bins full of produce up the steps and into the hub, which is closed on Saturdays. They head straight for the walk-in cooler in the back storage area. Even after the rise in the community kitchen took what they could use, there's still plenty left for the hub.
Greens, including microgreens. We've got a big bag of garlic. We've got Jerusalem artichokes, and we have a good selection of microgreens also.
Having worked at the hub myself, I know firsthand what a welcome sight those fresh local foods will be when the staff and volunteers set up the pantry on Monday morning, especially now in the middle of winter. I asked Janice and Deborah if this was a typical amount for a Saturday in February.
We've had some weeks when we have spent up to probably $2,500 in one week, and that's at half price. So we're buying $4,500 to $5,000 of food at our max times, but we haven't had many of those.
And then this year has been particularly bad.
This year has been particularly bad. Through January and into February, we've been buying a couple $100 a week.
And what is the explanation of that from the farmers?
Well, it was really cold. You know, we had that really cold spell, and then also it was dark. So the greens especially kind of suffered during that period and then had a hard time, just slow coming back. And you can tell, we can tell today how much more there is. So you can tell it's starting to warm up. Mm-hmm. And days are getting longer.
Yes. Days are getting longer. A little more light, a little bit warmer.
As the days lengthen and the temperatures rise, farmers will have more excess produce to share, and Farm to Family Fund will have the funds available to compensate farmers. If you want to learn more about the Farm to Family Fund, the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market, or any of the organizations in this story, just visit our website at eartheats.org. Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers. On Bloomington's east side corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. Brunch every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. NeedMoreRoasters.com. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. A big thank you to the Earth Eats crew, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Daniel Orr, Indiana University Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Janice Lilly, Deborah Piston-Hatlin, Maureen Springstead, and everyone at the Hub and the Community Kitchen. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young. Thanks for tuning in to Earth Eats this week. We'll see you next time.